always warm and barky, also spidery and barky. Choking on your wop, lying in the swamp, looking at the ways, blaze, haze, and rays. You can be a Marty Sater wrestling with an alligator. Your time, covered up with slime, frogging with the water, snakes and nips, breaking through the quagmire, head aflame with swamp fire, hopping through the swamp.
Coming up next on Free Radio at 101.1 FM, it's the 420 version of Bathrop Pierre's Broadsides. That's me. Stay with me for the next 2 hours. Special in-studio guest, Legal Eagle Ray Glock-Grunike. We'll talk about the Jones decision down in Los Angeles, which overturns police practices harassing homeless people who sleep in a 500-block area. Stay tuned.
Come get out of the way, boys. Quick, get out of the way. You'd better watch what you say, boys. Better watch what you say. We've rammed in your harbor and tied to your port, and our pistols are hungry and our tempers are short. So bring your daughters around to the fore. 'Cause we're the cops of the world, boys. We're the cops of the world. We pick and choose as we please, boys. Pick and choose as we please. You'd best get down on your knees, boys. Best get down on your knees. We're hairy and horny and ready to shack, and we don't care if you're yellow or black. Just take off your clothes and lay down on your back. 'Cause we're the cops of the world, boys. We're the cops of the world. Our boots are needing a shine, boys. Boots are needing a shine. But our Coca-Cola is fine, boys. Coca-Cola is fine. We've got to protect all our citizens fair. So we'll send a battalion for everyone there. And maybe we'll leave in a couple of years. 'Cause we're the cops of the world, boy. We're the cops of the world. And dump the reds in a pile, boy. Dump the reds in a pile. You'd better wipe off that smile, boy. Better wipe off that smile. We'll spit through the streets of the cities we wreck, and we'll find you a leader that you can elect. Those treaties we signed were a pain in the neck. 'Cause we're the cops of the world, boys. We're the cops of the world. And clean the Johns with a rag, boys. Clean the Johns with a rag. If you like, you can use your flag, boys. If you like, you can use your flag.
got too much money, we're looking for toys. And guns will be guns, and boys will be boys. But we'll gladly pay for all we destroy. 'Cause we're the cops of the world, boys. We're the cops of the world. Please stay off of the grass, boys. Please stay off of the grass. Here's a kick in the ass, boys. Here's a kick in the ass. We'll smash down your doors. We don't bother to knock. We've done it before, so why all the shock? We're the biggest and the toughest kids on the block. And we're the cops of the world, boys. We're the cops of the world. And when we butchered your sons, boys, when we butchered your sons, have a stick of our gum, boys. Have a stick of our bubble gum. We own half the world, oh say can you see? And the name for our profits is democracy. So like it or not, you will have to be free. 'Cause we're the cops of the world, boys. We're the cops of the world.
And that was Cops of the World by Phil Oakes. A lot of them cops around these days, and particularly in Santa Cruz. We've got the Cops of the World here in Santa Cruz, too, telling us all that traditional Santa Cruz behaviors, like chatting with a friend in a parking lot on a sunny day, is now going to be punishable by a fine of anywhere between $100 and $1,000 starting in late May if the City Council passes the second reading of the what I call the parking lot panic law, or some called it the parking lot poo-poo and pee-pee panic law, coming up at City Council 3 o'clock on Tuesday. So stay tuned to this station for the next 2 hours. We're going to have a number of items happening. One of them is the discussion, further discussion of this issue, though we've kind of beaten it to death, and still the council wants to bring it to life. Amazing. There's also going to be a special guest in the studio. He's called in. He's emailed in, and I expect he will be coming in. That's Ray Glock-Gruneich, formerly attorney in Santa Cruz, now dedicated legal worker, has been probably the person who's handled the most camping cases of any attorney probably in this county, maybe even in this state. Who knows? Camping, that's his, you know, the survival activity that homeless people engage in that is against the law 24 hours a day in Santa Cruz, and sleeping, part of that particular part of the activity that's particularly essential, we can all be reassured, is only illegal from 11 o'clock at night to 8:30 in the morning under the Rotkin-Matthews law, passed originally back in 1978, but reaffirmed by Rotkin and Matthews in their votes against any kind of reform. Also, stay tuned at 7 o'clock for a special clip from Christopher I Want to Be a Supervisor Crone. He will be not coming on the air here, per se, but I happened to be going through storage, and I found some old tapes of Christopher Crone as council member, and I will be giving... I haven't decided who I'm going to vote for in this particular race. It's like different colors of feces is sort of the problem in terms of the actual product we're getting. I don't mean the human beings involved. I'm not commenting on Neil Kunity's human status or Christopher Crone's human nature, but their political nature, what they stand for, what they're likely to do, what they will do in terms of keeping commitments around the issues of people who are low income and poor, particularly people who are homeless, which, of course, has been one of my themes for many years. And you'll be able to hear Christopher Crone answer some questions around this issue when he was on a free radio show way back in 1999, gosh, 7 years ago, his freshman year as a city council member. That'll be at 7 o'clock, maybe a little after, if Ray Glock-Gruneich's analysis of the Jones decision goes on. Well, let's begin now with some street stuff and progress to what comes next. If you want to call us here in the studio, it's not hard to do. Phone number is 427-3772, 427-3772. You can also go to pagesandcolor.com. It's a chat room. I'm actually looking at it now, and I will attempt to answer your questions, pass on your commentary, and generally treat you with the respect which you deserve. Or you can call in. That's even better, 427-3772. Or call me off the air at 423-HUFF if you want to leave a message. Or if you've got things you want to pass on to the studio, whether it's merchandise, money, inquiries, objections, lewd comments, sexist or otherwise, you can call 427-4523. That's the voicemail for Free Radio Santa Cruz. Or you can go to freakradio.org online, where we're also streaming at the moment, in case you have a problem with the radio or you prefer to hear us on computer. Finally, these shows are archived at huffsantacruz.org, huffsantacruz.org. Huff is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom.
Sacramento lobbyist, gregarious Greg, or guitar-toting Greg, or whatever. Greg, what's happening in Sacramento?
Well, essentially, we went down there today as part of a group to lobby against money being allocated to the county of Santa Cruz through the Regional Transportation Commission as a measure to sneak around the defeat of Measure J to widen Highway 1. That's right. So the Regional Transportation Committee has decided they'll do it piecemeal, segment by segment, sort of like sneak lanes under different names.
Sneak widening.
I didn't see all of them. So we were in there before the California Transportation Commission. We also met with Assemblymember John Laird, all his staff person, Chris Reese, and Laird, that's the bashful John Laird, that's the one.
Well, he's very kind to us. And
did he come out in favor of the proposal of blocking this money?
Not necessarily.
I watched the pros in action. Now, of course, we went to other advocacy groups also. While we were there, we just literally worked that capital. It was amazing, actually, how much we ran around town. Next time, I'd demand golf carts to move me around. Absolutely.
Yeah, they had balls.
To go to Sacramento. We spoke to people who were advocates for regional rail transportation and also Conservation League, actually, trying to garner additional support. The amazing thing was, though, at the California Transportation Commission hearing itself, were all these appointees from governors, the Mucky Mucks, some looking like Lord Baltimore,
the Dollar Chandrum.
That's correct. The matrons and such, they afforded us great respect, on par with the County Board of Supervisors. That's all there were in that meeting, was all these county commissions.
How many were you lobbying from Santa Cruz?
I'd say there's about 17 of us showed up. And we had our little sign saying, don't pave on our democracy, which is kind of amazing. Most people were saying, give us money, give us money. We went in and said, we don't want the money. So that was right away counterintuitive.
We got any media coverage?
I don't think so. They gave a little drama inside the, and some excitement inside that otherwise drill and boring administrative hearing.
Now, I heard Micah Posner of People Power, who was one of the organizers of this, spoke on Free Radio last week, and he said that he actually paid $50 for people to come along. Were you one of the people who were kicked down money to go?
I was a paid stooge all the way.
You were a paid stooge?
Absolutely, absolutely. Instead of being taken to a $50 plate fundraiser, I was provided all my transportation, whatever cost it was. The train lines were outstanding. I enjoyed it. To actually get there.
Right.
And do, if you would.
Your meals. Were you given a meal?
No, I wasn't necessarily. But, of course, me.
Champion candy bars? What
champion.
Did you just
ground? You're like, I have no problem.
Dumpster diving in Sacramento?
No, they had this County Supervisors Day, statewide. And then they're giving out Louisiana gold or beads that you put on necklaces and all this ice cream.
Sold the beads.
Hell no. Pistachio and vanilla. But the awesome
ice cream.
Carl Boone actually provided a tremendous lunch. This was fantastic. They had all these leftovers.
Oh, Boone, the city council candidate?
Yes. It was outstanding.
No fly Boone, that the one.
So I'd have to say that we met with one of the members who was responsible for the allocation of a couple billion bucks to provide us the train, very trains we rode on. Which was unique. We're the only ones, obviously, who took mass transit, public transit, to get from here, Santa Cruz in the morning, to the Capitol by noon, and then back tonight.
Do we know what the outcome of all this was, or we'll learn that later?
It was quite unique. From what I could hear, from the questions that were raised by the commission itself, the California Transit Commission, that they said, we only got so much money anyway, and it looks like there's concerns here. These people came all the way to see us, and by the way, we know you have a commission. The new local commission still hasn't decided a task force. What the hell has been on that?
And that was Gregarious Greg, a local singer and political activist who had come back from the Stop the Widening of Highway 1 Sacramento lobbying. Gosh, almost a month ago now. I apologize for the bad quality of the tape. Hopefully our next tape will be better. And, of course, if you call in, you can do a little singing. Maybe we can do some comparison. And now, actually, I'm hoping this will improve. Stay tuned. I'm here in front of the New Leaf Market, and people are scurrying away like rats as they flee the scene. There go two of them, and a third man alone is standing here looking a little bewildered. Your name, sir?
J.P.
And J.P., you've heard about this fine attempt to defend the safety of our individuals by closing down parking lots to questionable characters. What do you think of this idea?
I'd never heard of it.
Well, you'd better pay more attention, that's all I can say.
Looks like I will.
Grab a flyer. We'll get your analysis in a moment.
Call me if you want.
And you can call me, too, at any time. But what can you call me is the question. Any comments on the parking lot law?
I think it's unconstitutional.
Why would you say that?
That's all I
would say at this time. All right, then. You're under arrest. There's an officer. You could turn yourself in. Maybe you've read it. What's your analysis?
It's a lame law.
And why would you say that? I mean, you know, this law has gotten the support of our parking lot attendants, our parking lot manager Matt Farrell, council member Ryan Coonerty. Who are you to stand against this tide of progressive analysis?
No comment.
Well, there you have it. Another malcontent. Thank you very much.
Kathy.
Kathy, you're looking at this one more time flyer about the downtown ordinance demonstration coming up tomorrow morning at the downtown commission. What's your reading on this as you sort of look it over? Any thoughts?
Well, as you've explained it, at least, it doesn't sound great. Because I always take longer than 10 minutes to do things.
Now, how old are you, madam?
65.
And do you mean to say that the entire city just have to wait for you to do your business in a parking lot? Don't you realize time marches on?
Yeah, faster and faster, but I'm still slower than that.
Well, you have to be prepared to step up the pace or get out of the road, don't you agree?
No.
I'm glad to hear that, actually. Why don't you take that with you and pass it on to a friend or possibly an enemy, depending on how you feel.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Talking to
Rachel.
And
Mark Shelton.
And Rachel, this is the first time you've seen this flyer about this 10-minute trespass law in parking lots and garages. What's your initial response?
That I don't know anything about it.
So you will educate yourself further, perhaps?
I suppose.
I'm expecting a full education. How about you, sir?
Well, what about the soccer moms that are waiting for their kids to get out of soccer practice? You know, are they going to be arrested?
No, simply cited.
Yeah, it sounds like a revenue-generating machine.
Well, actually, if they are the right kind of person, they'll probably just be warned.
Yes.
So, no problem, right?
Well, it's a problem with me.
Why would that be?
Because I have a feeling I'm going to be the one generating the revenue for them.
Because of your tousled hair and tie-dyed shirt?
And general disheveled look.
Yes.
And piece of shit car.
Okay, now,
I mean, I'm a ruffian, too.
Well, let's talk about that. Now, who is this individual who's singing on your shirt?
Janis Joplin.
Oh, it is Janis Joplin. It shows you dates me, I guess, you know, from the 30s or something. Anna, you're showing me the back of your shirt. It says, looks like everybody in this whole world round is down on me, so to speak, right?
I can't.
So what do you think? I don't want to leave you out, you tousle-haired thing, you. What's your analysis of this law? Or are you still pondering?
Well, if they're people wait in sidewalks and parking lots for different reasons. If they're not causing problems, I don't see the issue. If they're obviously causing problems with people around them, then they're going to get taken care of anyway. So why is this, what is the big issue that they're having with this?
They claim that the parking lot attendants are concerned that there are people camping in the parking lots, which is illegal, actually, anyway.
Yeah.
And that they need another tool to call the police with. It would make it easier for them if everybody were excluded from the parking lots except those with vehicles and bicycles.
Okay, now I personally know a group that has permission from a building to use the parking lot above the building at certain times so that they can do some sports practice.
Now, they could probably get a permit from the city for that, but ragamuffins like, well, certain people, I won't say who, would not be, unless they have a permit, allowed on the premises of any of the city's 24 parking lots or parking lot garages. Unless, of course, they have their bicycle or vehicle with them. And then, of course, only for 10 minutes.
Well, a lot of them have a bike anyway.
Well, there you are. So what's the problem? What are you complaining about?
I'm not complaining. I'm just trying to understand why they feel they need this extra tool, because if somebody's causing problems, they're going to get rid of them anyway.
But it's so much easier if you have a, you shouldn't be here, you're under arrest, get the fuck out. Don't you think?
Yeah.
Well, I want to thank you. We've been talking with
Rachel.
Thank you, Rachel. So we're approaching the SAFE event on March 22nd. There's a flautist, a guitar, two guitars, and a drum. My goodness, it's the divided SAFE here. My goodness, looks like all musicians and no audience. My goodness, it's politically oriented as well. And well spotlighted. We have Gregarious Greg on the guitar.
Dear Robert Schwartz, I read your bulletin today.
We have a man on the drum making announcements. And a politically aware drummer, a questionable Valerie Promise, sipping who knows what. And of course, over here, is it White Eagle, White Feather? I don't know. He's on the piccolo or the flute. And
I think you misspelled the word duck on your shirt.
Oh, dear. Well, what's happening here? Any comments?
It's a flute. It's a flute.
It's a flute.
Piccolo.
I'll get it right. One of these days. The piccolo is much shorter. And why aren't you playing a piccolo? There's so many flutes around and so few piccolos.
Yeah.
Fingers are too fat? Yeah, well. That's a reasonable excuse, I suppose. Coming up next, Roger Etc. on the Master.
The Roger Etc.
The Roger Etc.
Get out of your car. We got to wait a minute here for the.
And again, another informational commercial from Mr. Drummer Man, who's quite loud, actually, I would have to say.
I'm ready to do my statement here. We got to wait. We'll wait.
I got to wait.
Gonna get a ticket, yeah.
I sister.
Gonna have to pay the city a whole bunch of money, yeah. The city's only desperate.
He wants me to.
For a bunch of money.
So,
thank you very much. Okay, here we are. And I, D. Roger, etc., have by secret phenomenon means obtained a copy of the secret document from the White House, George W. Bush. And here it is. It's called the All-American Homeless Sausage Company Incorporated. Stockholders, George W. Bush, Dick Cheney cronies, Jane Fonda and cronies, sundry other Republicans and their cronies. Mission statement. Homeless people can be useful. It just depends on how we use those you people. Consumer society as is, so many just a paycheck or whatever away from being homeless. We have an endless renewable resource in our fellow Americans. Think about that. Like lemmings to the sea, the march of the homeless is with us. All stragglers falling out of formation will be bayoneted and beheaded, then chopped up and ground up into sausages. Good and decent people do need their breakfast meats. The All-American Homeless Sausage Company, Inc. That's George Bush's answer to the homeless population.
Oh, the long-tailed rats and the pussycats will never more be seen, or they've been ground to sausage meat and whatever his name is, machine.
Yes, that's the one.
And that seemed a little irrelevant, but hey, coming up soon, some more specific and pertinent topics. Some unknown and unexpected, actually known but unexpected guests are arriving, and I will introduce them shortly. But in the meantime, more from the street. Before that, however, again, a reminder, if you have any calls you wish to make to this studio, the number here, should you want it, is 427-3772. That's an invitation, by the way. Call in if you have any thoughts about what you're hearing or any reactions, strong epithets, euphemisms. I don't care. Whatever you got is fine. Again, the number 427-3772. It's a 15-minute trespass law, not a 10-minute trespass law. It began that way. The current statute, as passed at a first reading a week and a half ago and as proposed for a second reading on April 25th at the afternoon session of the Santa Cruz City Council, states, in essence, you get 15 minutes if you've got a car or a bicycle with you and you're parking it or you're a passenger in that vehicle. After that, you may have a citation for an infraction, depending on the largesse of the officer who happens to see you. If you are not a possessor of a bicycle or a car that is parking in that particular lot, it will be illegal for you to enter that lot or that garage unless you are walking directly through, unless you have a permit, unless you are a city employee on city business. I think that's it. There's no exceptions for disabled people. There's no exceptions for walking into a porta potty in the middle of the parking lot, as is the case in the near Cathcart and Chestnut, or not Chestnut, Cedar, where Food Not Bombs has its regular meal every Wednesday next to the farmer's market. It is a grotesque, to me, completely violative ordinance of the spirit of Santa Cruz, which has not been justified by any kind of evidence of a crime wave or of that this particular kind of law would be a worthwhile sacrifice of 1,000 small pleasures, 1,000 small protections that each of us have to sit in our car, if we have a car, to sit in our bike, to sit even, you know, to stand in a parking lot next to our friend's car and chat with him or her. All these will be gone come May 25th if this law passes. A month after its April 25th passage, next Tuesday, you can kiss these rather mundane and simple pleasures goodbye. You will be under a time limit. Why? Because parking lot workers who clean up parking lots want to get rid of campers, and they don't want to bother to fill out citizen arrest forms. They don't want to clean up messes left behind by campers. Specifically, there have been graphic descriptions of poo-poo and pee-pee, but of course no mention of the fact that the restrooms are closed during the late night hours and non-existent in most places around these parking lots. Particularly, there's two restrooms, one in a park in both the, I guess, the Locust Street garage and the I never know the names of these places. The one that's near the Cinema 9 does not have a restroom. The one that's near the Little Shanghai does, and the one across, one next to Borders does. But it's very basic restrooms, no soap, no towels, pretty sordid shit, actually. Nonetheless, they are restrooms, but they don't stay open past 10. In fact, I think it may even close before that. So the idea that people should be abused for taking a dump when there's no place to go is like blaming people who are tortured for screaming too loudly and disturbing the peace. We have a caller here. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Aloha, Robert.
Yes.
Hey, this is Crow. How you doing? Can you hear me?
I can, Crow. You're a little distorted. Put your mouth back from the phone.
Okay, how about now?
A little bit still distorted.
A little bit better?
That's good.
Okay, because I'm on a payphone. You know how these things are.
I do.
So you're telling me that if I'm going around the city collecting signatures for an initiative or a proposition, that I could be cited, and if I don't leave collecting my signatures in a public parking area where people come in to and fro from their car, that I could be arrested?
I am saying that that's a possibility, but I failed to mention one additional exception, which they wrote into the law because an ACLU guy showed up at the downtown commission hearing. There is an exception, quote, "This chapter shall not apply in areas of city parking lots and garages where there is posted permission to occupy those areas for the purpose of engaging in speech-related conduct, and persons so occupying those posted areas are doing so in accordance with the posted permission." So, in theory, they could say, oh, you're allowed here for 15 minutes if you're giving out leaflets, but then you have to leave. Or they could say, you're allowed in this 5x5 box zone to stand and petition all day. Or they could say something like, during the hours of the daylight, you're allowed in the parking lot, but after that, go find yourself a street lamp. They could set any number of conditions, and that might be regarded by our increasingly repressive and bureaucrat-pleasing courts as an appropriate regulation of time, place, and manner.
Yes, I see. We're going to have quite a battle with our fellow, liberal fascists who are writing these laws?
Well said, yes.
Because it's kind of funny that they hoot and holler about this Patriotic Act and stuff.
The Patriot Act, yeah.
Yeah, Patriot Act, whatever the fuck they call that thing. They get national attention when they actually make a law that is 10 times worse than what the whatever that law does.
Patriot Act.
Yeah, Patriot Act could ever do to an individual's rights and freedom on a daily basis.
You're right. The Patriot Act is, of course, has numerous provisions. It's a massive revision of the criminal code, giving prosecutors vast powers. But, of course, that's mainly intended against those whom they wish to incarcerate or tie up as potential, quote, terrorist suspects. But you see, the real terrorists in our local scene are homeless people and campers, because they are more like they're nuisance terrorists. They are potentially an economic drain. They remind us that poverty is still here and prosperity is not around the corner. And, besides, they drive down the property values.
So you're telling me that the city council has conscripted its own Patriot Act in a way to actually attack the terrorists that they feel are violating their freedoms and safeties because they're so afraid of these people who are living on the streets, that they came up with this grand idea of limiting people's time and space in a public area.
Well, what I'm saying is that they have no respect for the rights of 1,500 to 2,000 people who have no shelter outside, and under the recent Jones decision in L.A., which you probably know something about, the city should be put on notice that if it arrests people who have no place to go, and it does so for sleeping, if it's criminalized sleeping, as it has, for example, already, we're not even talking about saying let people sleep in the parking lot structures of the parking lots or garages. We're just saying let them come in out of the rain and stand there for a while, or let lovers neck in a car in the top of a parking lot watching the sunset.
You
know. I mean, that's going to be illegal unless you're only there for 15 minutes, and if it's not your car, if you're just walking through and you want to get up to the second level and watch the sunset, forget it. You're out of there, man.
I'm sure I will be getting numerous tickets on this, citations, and being arrested if it comes down to it, because I will be going to the law library, and hopefully some friends who are also involved in or interested in going to the law library to fight these citations and arrests and fight this law and somehow, some way, maybe get a lawyer to help us with this. I don't really need one because I've done it myself with the sleeping ban, But they just threw it out of court when they knew that I was going the same route as a lot of others have.
You know, Crow, I've got a suggestion because I think, well, I think that's nothing wrong with that approach. I think we want to kind of broaden the rules here. I mean, there have been some more, should we say, comic and theatrical approaches that have been proposed. For example, it's perfectly legal to set up a chair and sit with an umbrella downtown in front of the very businesses that are supporting this measure. So I was going to suggest we have a parking lot overflow zone in broad daylight as a sort of a training center for people who are going to be driven away or trying to train themselves not to go in out of the rain into the parking garages. Instead, they'll go down in front of Artisans or Atlantis Fantasy World or some of the other places that have endorsed this measure. I mean, let's put it this way. People who are on the either downtown commission or downtown association, Joe, Atlantis Fantasy World.
But then you know they'll come up with a 15-minute umbrella law.
Well, now, that would be more difficult for them because that's a public forum. That's a public sidewalk. But, you know, it's possible. They already have an hour move-along law on the sidewalk.
Hey,
that's
no
correct.
Sitting on the sidewalk.
And there's no sitting on 95% of the sidewalks in business districts. So that's true. There, and other possibilities are a scavenger hunt in the parking lots. We're thinking of us organizing a very massive scavenger hunt, sort of a treasure hunt, you know.
Excellent.
Yeah, and then there's a possibility of a kind of a friendly camp out on the city council lawn to encourage them and let them know that we are on their side. We are trying to provide our own facilities since we don't want them to be arrested or enjoined or have their treasury looted because of the Jones decision. Therefore, we're helping them out with some tents, maybe even on the sidewalk next to where Mayor Matthews has her own house.
Yeah, and envision our town actually doing something right, like getting a toilet that is self-cleaning and it's free to the public, you know. But that's a little bit of beyond, I guess, city council because they want people to hold their shit in until they try to find a restroom or have to defecate somewhere because nobody will let you use the restroom, whether you are a paying customer or not sometimes.
But, I mean, I'm glad you're organizing, you know, and preparing to fight this. I think there's a variety of ways to fight it.
Yes, we need to attack it at all angles, for sure, because this is a very beastly head coming at us.
And I remind you that it's going to be on the agenda, probably not at 3 o'clock, probably later, but you probably have to show up at 3 o'clock or thereabouts on Tuesday, next Tuesday at City Council, right across from the library in the City Council chamber.
I will try to do my best to get there. I do have a day job. But this is a burning issue for me because you and I know we spend lots of our wonderful time at the parking lot downtown during the farmer's market, which is kind of funny when I read in the newspaper about Coonhead, but his comment says that the parking lots are just for bicyclists and cars. Well, I guess he didn't remember that we have a farmer's market and the other thing that goes on Sunday, the other street thing that goes on.
There's an antique fair. They're going to tell you, and their response to that will be, well, these are permitted events. If Food Not Bombs wants to go get a permit, they'll get a permit. That's not going to be an issue is what they're going to say. But, of course, I'm more concerned about the 1,000 little things that happen in these 8 to 10 square blocks.
Oh, of course.
And how we're now being told we have to censor ourselves. We have to be little cops so we can avoid their little bureaucratic cops running around fucking with us. You know, I mean, it's just bad.
It's
just
horrible.
Wrong.
And it's really quite funny, these little liberal fascists, you know, I mean, they just talk so much crap about everything, and when it comes down to it, they're doing the same thing. They're pointing their fingers at other politicians who they call Republicans or whatever you want to call them.
It's true, Crow. Let me roll on you now because I'm going to pick up some other calls.
Okay, buddy. Thank you.
Thank you, and call again.
Yes, I will.
Bye-bye. Phone lines open, 427-3772. I'm actually looking at an article which Craig Canada, our homeless guru, who's also got his own website, particularly around medical marijuana, brought to my attention. It's on the Sentinel Forum. It's a thread called Illegal Dawdling, and it's apparently got 9 pages already. That things are flying hot and heavy on the Sentinel Forum website. If you're interested, just Google for the Santa Cruz Sentinel, get the main page and go down. You'll find a list of forums, and one of them is on illegal dawdling, from which is taken from the article by Shanna McCord. Oh boy, here it's got the name of this. this mistress of hate speech, Leslie Scanagata. I like to call her Leslie Scumagata, actually, or got a lot of scumma. I'm not sure what we should call her. She's the one who said that she talked about a homeless masturbator on all fours as her opening speech when she butted in line in front of a disabled woman at the last city council meeting. Interesting. Frankly, I got to tell you, I've never much liked Leslie's manner, although I respect the fact that she's an SEIU union worker. Just no respect, obviously, for homeless workers who are in this situation, and just no problem with all kinds of hate speech around homeless people. You know, calling homeless people as a generic class perverts and masturbators and so forth. Nothing wrong with masturbating. I do it myself, I confess. But it's not something that, you know, it's designed to make them be regarded as worthless, as pieces of trash, as something to be shunned and feared. When, of course, the real people to be shunned and feared, frankly, are the politicians with a lot of power who are removing large amounts of public space from the public area. And that's what bothers me. So, let's see. I'm looking over this this forum. And interesting stuff. My guest has not yet arrived. I suspect it's going to be a little later. That sometimes happens with Ray. So we may be waiting for him. He was going to talk on the Jones decision. And I don't see any new emails from him. So he probably still is on his way. Hopefully so. Let's turn now to a little more street stuff. So stay tuned.
Rock in front of New Leaf Market. It's on April 18th. We're talking with White Owl. White Owl, you're a man who's played in numerous cities.
Yeah, New Orleans, all over the United States. New Orleans is my home.
You're pointing out that not only is there a hostile attitude where merchants can control whether the police will go after and harass local musicians, but that the one-hour move-along law, which is kind of unique to this town. Have you heard of the one-hour move-along law in any of the other cities you've been with?
No.
It has a kind of an impact because you were telling me that a musician needs a certain amount of time to kind of establish a milieu where she or he is.
Well, if you're playing outside a restaurant or somewhere where people have outdoor seating, which like we're standing in right now.
Where it's illegal to play within 15 feet.
Yeah, where it's illegal to play.
Within 10 feet.
Yeah, so it's like if you're playing there, the people don't, by the time they get through eating and come up to try to tip you, that you're... If they enjoyed your music and they wanted to give you something, you're gone because of the one-hour limit.
And has the one-hour limit been enforced against you here in Santa Cruz?
Several times.
And was it done just as a matter of course, because there was a complaint, because the police officer didn't take a shine to you? What was your reading of the situation?
Well, because one of the store owners thought I should move on.
Which store was it?
Probably, I don't know, it's either Pacific
Trading Company.
It's either Pacific Trading Company or the jewelry store up there.
My favorite stores.
And the only other time was at Chocolate.
Chocolat? Yeah, next to the Bookshop Santa Cruz.
Yeah.
I know that you have to start earning a little money. You see, you can't make much money in Santa Cruz.
Well, I haven't made that much. I don't make that much, $10 or $20 a day, 20 on a good day, 10, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, whatever.
What do you play?
Jazz and classical.
And you compose as well?
Yeah. I have my own. I have several pieces of my own.
Do you have a website, or is there any way people can access your music?
Not right now. I need money to record with. I've got part of a project started, and I was hoping to get it finished this year, but that's not going to happen.
What's your advice to musicians here? I was telling you, I think musicians should band together and stand up and, you know, if resist the unreasonable noise law. I think we should civilly break the move-along law, which, of course, the
violation. New Orleans, we've taken the city of New Orleans, the musicians in New Orleans have gotten together, and address certain issues about playing music. They were trying to stop people playing music, and underneath the Constitution of the freedom of expression as entertainers, it's the freedom of expression that constitutionally it's illegal.
You mean it's illegal for the government to do what it's doing, or for musicians to play?
For them to stop you from playing anywhere for any amount of time. It's illegal in the it's unconstitutional. It's an unconstitutional act.
Now, when did you observe this New Orleans folks getting together to resist, and when was this?
Oh, this was like several times over the past 10 years or so, like a couple different times.
What's the situation now in New Orleans, do you know?
I have no idea. I haven't been there since Katrina.
Because I know that elsewhere on the West Coast, they use the time, place, and manner excuse to say, as long as we give you some place to play, we can restrict you everywhere else, provided it's a reasonable time, place, and manner regulation.
What's reasonable?
Whatever the city council says, whatever the police department wants, whatever the merchant association likes. That's a good question. What is reasonable? And the answer is that they found that these ordinances that criminalize up to, well, it hasn't really been taken very far in Santa Cruz. Three of the weed! But anyway, it hasn't been taken very far in Santa Cruz, but there is a law in Santa Cruz that essentially prohibits playing with a cap in front of you on about 80% of the sidewalks on Pacific Avenue and 100% of the sidewalks elsewhere, because there's this 10 feet from a building prohibition, and most sidewalks in Santa Cruz are about 10 feet wide.
Yeah.
You know, so therefore it's illegal, which is pretty sweeping. It hasn't been subject to a constitutional challenge. It should be. Perhaps you would be the man, though, Robert.
I didn't need to go out of here.
You're shaking your head. Thanks for talking to us. We've been talking with
White Owl.
So it's about 10 to 8, and we're at Safeland in front of New Leaf Market, which has kind of rotated back to the alfrescos here in front of New Leaf. It's April 19th, Wednesday night, 2006, and I am talking to a man eating a bowl of the spaghetti. Your name, sir?
It's Hawk.
Hey, Hawk, I think I saw you biking down the street the other day.
Yeah.
The other moment, actually.
I have a little story to tell you. I went to court for all my tickets. I had five of them. I had warrants and that. Was in for a couple hours, and they released me out. So when I went to court, I turned around for the tickets. I said it was my fault, which I was a dumb butt. I got the camping tickets and one open container.
Which court?
Okay, to the traffic court.
Referee basket.
Well, I'm challenging one of the tickets, and it was Ranger Wallace's. And the 25th, I'm to be in court to challenge his ticket, which he had no right to give because it was an open container, or possession of alcohol in an open container in a park. And it was in the Poconos, and which we did not have. We had possession of alcohol, but it was in our bags, which he searched, pulled them out, and gave us a ticket for drinking and for having possession. He had no right going into our buggies, and he had no right giving us a ticket when we weren't drinking.
Was he citing you for something else in which he did the search?
Nope. He just went right in and looked around and that. And
did you give him permission?
I didn't give him no permission.
Did you tell him that he didn't have permission?
No, he couldn't have no permission. He just walked up and grabbed it right out of my buggy.
You say
underneath clothing and everything else, you know.
They give it back, and you say take your hands off that, or
no, nothing. You know, because he's sitting there writing us tickets and stuff like that. I pulled him out on the ground, and that. My girlfriend went to jail because she had a warrant for her. Okay, she spent a couple days in jail. He took her up to the car, which Officer Hoppy arrested her and took her to jail. Then he comes back and says, "Oh, I'm sorry, guys, I can't take this." He gave us both back the bottles that weren't even opened. but still, can you take these tickets back now, please? Told you we didn't drink the damn thing, so we haven't been drinking. But no. He says, oh, I can't do that. I said, but they ain't even open.
So you,
you went in a buggy.
You had no open bottle?
No open bottles. Nothing.
Yet he wrote you a ticket.
We cleaned up that whole beach down there at the Poconip. Cleaned up all the trash, picked up all the recyclables, loaded them up, and we showed it to them. We got two garbage bags full of stuff that we just cleaned up off your beach. I said, we're sitting there eating lunch, just got done with a Pepsi. I said, you come down there saying we're drinking. I says, that's not right.
And indeed, even if they were drinking, we're talking about adults who should have the right to drink something in a sort of an isolated area of the Poconip. It's an example of, again, one of those tools given to officers to drive away people they selectively want to drive away. I think if the Ranger Wallace had happened upon a well-dressed couple out of an impressionist painting having a picnic on the grass with a bottle of wine, well, who knows? Maybe he would have felt impelled to exert his authority there, too. But it just seems outrageous under any circumstances. And, of course, it's a tool often used against homeless people. It produces warrants, failures to appear, not to mention a lot of ill will and a lot of humiliation. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM. I'm Robert Norris. This is Bathrop's Piers Broadsides. Today is 420, by the way, and in the word from the proposition circulators wanting to make it legal to have for an adult to possess marijuana in their home, not just for medicinal purposes, but for recreational use. That initiative has gotten, according to Andrea Tischler of the Compassion Flower, in 6,000 signatures, which may qualify it once 25 or 30% of those are eliminated for bad signature, since it's a pretty onerous requirement to get city-registered voters on the petition properly in a short period of time. We may actually have an initiative on the November ballot, which makes marijuana enforcement the lowest priority. Of course, it's still illegal under state and federal law, so unless people start doing it in greater numbers civilly disobediently, or unless there's changes in the federal and state law, or unless the courts come up with some unusual rulings, we're still up shit creek. I'm also going to talk, if I have any time before the end of the show, about an article in the Good Times about 420, that is to say the celebration of the right to use marijuana, either medicinally or recreationally, which is currently responsible for 750,000 people being in jail, that is to say the denial of that right. And we have a sanitized history of marijuana in Santa Cruz written in the Good Times, celebrating a few people, ignoring a lot of others, and ignoring some real fundamental facts, many of which I've talked about here on the radio. However, I'm going to turn now to another subject, because in the studio with me, I have, is it one or two distinguished guests? I'm not sure. One. And the non-guest made that perfectly clear. Ray.
Actually, she's the distinguished one. I'm the one who's non-distinguished.
Well, let's distinguish your voice by having you belly up to this mic here. And when you talk close to the mic. Pretend you're kind of embracing your love.
All right. This is Ray Glock-Grunijk, and I've been asked to come make a few comments about the Jones case.
Now, I'm going to read a little bit about the Jones case here from the L.A. Times. I want you to stop me if you find something interesting or to critique it afterward, okay? Is that acceptable, Ray? Okay. We talked about this last show. Los Angeles' policy of arresting homeless people for sitting, lying, or sleeping on public sidewalks as, quote, an unavoidable consequence of being human and homeless without shelter, unquote, violates the constitutional prohibition against cruel and unusual punishment, a federal appeals court ruled today. The U.S. That was actually a week ago. The U.S. Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, in a 2-1 decision, decided in favor of six homeless persons represented by the American Civil Liberties Union of Southern California. The suit challenged the city's practice of arresting persons for violating a municipal ordinance which states that no person shall sit, lie, or sleep in or upon any street, sidewalk, or public way. The appeals court ruled that the manner in which the city has enforced the ordinance has criminalized, quote, the status of homelessness by making it a crime making it a crime to be homeless, and thereby violated the Eighth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. City officials had no immediate comment on the ruling, but it appeared that the decision could have significant ramifications for the city's policy on the burgeoning problems of homelessness. In her ruling, Judge Kim McLean Wardlaw said that the Los Angeles Skid Row has the highest concentration of homeless individuals in the United States, about 11,000 to 12,000 homeless people, and I bet even money that that is a vast understatement.
It's just in Skid Row. It's a total of 80,000 in the city.
42,000. If we're going to get some commentary, you better get close to a mic there, non-guest. Yes, actually, I will introduce our non-guest in a moment. Because there is substantial and undisputed evidence that the number of homeless persons in Los Angeles far exceeds the number of available shelter beds, as in Santa Cruz, at all times, including on the night the plaintiffs were arrested or cited, Los Angeles has encroached upon the plaintiffs' Eighth Amendment protections by criminalizing the unavoidable act of sitting, lying, or sleeping at night while being involuntarily homeless, Wardlaw wrote. Her lengthy opinion states that the Los Angeles ordinance is one of the most restrictive municipal laws regulating public spaces in the United States. The city can secure a conviction under the ordinance against anyone who merely sits, lies, or sleeps in a public way at any time of day. She adds, other cities' ordinances similarly directed at the homeless provide ways to avoid criminalizing the status of homelessness by making an element of the crime some conduct in combination with sitting, lying, or sleeping in a state of homelessness. Not Santa Cruz. Sleeping is sleeping, and it's illegal between 11 and 8:30. But as Judge Tom Kangaroo Kelly put it, you can always sleep during the day. Wardlaw cited numerous reports on the homeless situation in Los Angeles, including one written by city officials, which said the gap between the homeless population needing a shelter bed and the inventory of shelter beds is severely large. This is a much longer article, and Ray, it looks like you're looking through your notes, so I'll keep reading the article unless you feel obliged to, Ray is Ray, you can actually you've got underlined passages, feel free to shout them out, or I can keep reading. Which would you prefer?
Go ahead.
All right, I'll continue to read this LA Times article. As a result of the expansive needs of the Los Angeles the extreme lack of available shelter in Los Angeles and a large homeless population, thousands of people violate the Los Angeles ordinance every day and night, and many are arrested, losing what few possessions they may have. It is very unusual for a plaintiff to win a case based on the Eighth Amendment of the Constitution, which bars cruel and unusual punishment. Courts, including the U.S. Supreme Court, frequently rebuff challenges based on the Eighth Amendment. For example, in recent years, the High Court had rejected Eighth Amendment appeals challenging long sentences for minor crimes stemming from three strikes law. However, in this instance, Judge Wardlaw analogized to earlier rulings which said the mere act of being a drug addict or an alcoholic is not itself a crime. In 1962, the Supreme Court in Robinson v. California reversed the conviction of a California man who had been convicted of violating a state law which made it a criminal offense to, quote, be addicted to the use of narcotics, unquote. At the time, the High Court said, it is unlikely that any state at this moment in history would attempt to make it a criminal offense for a person to be mentally ill or a leper or to be afflicted with a venereal disease. In the light of contemporary human knowledge, a law which made a criminal offense of such a disease would doubtless be universally thought to be an affliction of cruel and unusual punishment. The Supreme Court said that the California statute at issue clearly was in the same category, noting that the lawyer for the state acknowledged that narcotic addiction is an illness. In today's decision, that is to say last week's decision, Judge Wardlaw said at the very least the Robinson case, quote, establishes that the state may not criminalize being. That is, the state may not punish a person for who she is, independent of anything she has done. More than 40 years later, Wardlaw said that case stands for, quote, the proposition that the Eighth Amendment prohibits the state from punishing an involuntary act or condition if it is the unavoidable consequence of one's status or being. Wardlaw scoffed at the position Los Angeles officials took in the case. Quote, the city apparently believes that the plaintiffs can avoid sitting, lying, and sleeping for days, weeks, or months at a time to comply with the city's ordinance as if human beings could remain in perpetual motion. That being an impossibility, by criminalizing sitting, lying, and sleeping, the city is in fact criminalizing the plaintiff's status as homeless individuals, Wardlaw wrote. Mark Rosenbaum, legal director of the ACLU of Southern California, hailed the ruling as the most significant judicial decision involving homelessness in the history of the country. The case stands for the proposition that in America, homelessness is not a crime. An individual can choose not to rob a bank, but where an individual is homeless and there are not available beds, that individual is in constant violation of this ordinance with no way to establish his or her innocence, Rosenbaum said. If a homeless person commits a theft, that, of course, can be prosecuted. But the way the Los Angeles ordinance was being enforced, individuals were being criminalized solely because they did not have a place to live, Rosenbaum said. I think what community leaders need to do now is deal with the problem not by criminalizing homelessness, but by developing shelters, mental health programs, and jobs. That's not only humane, it is economically and socially wise. Once they do that, so many other social problems in this community will be alleviated, including the high population in a county jail. That's from the LA Times. We have a caller. And we also have a guest. We'll try to get to both of them. Hi there, caller. You're on the air with Robert Ray and the unknown extra guest.
Yeah. Hi, it's Nicholas out in Live Oak. I couldn't pick up your signal, so I thought I'd call in.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, have you got a computer? Maybe you should go on to
Freak
Radio.
No, I don't have a computer.
You don't have
a,
have you tried? Well, you may be, if you're usually able to pick it up or
It depends on the time of day.
Huh.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that.
Uh-huh.
You should be the first to learn that the unknown guest is Nancy.
Yeah, anyway, I wanted to call in because I'm doing a theater piece.
Go ahead, Nick.
And it's called Can't Stop the Clock, and it's about certain events that happened at the town clock. You and I were both there.
Uh-huh.
At the start of the Gulf War, huh?
Oh, right. The Jacobs, Flory.
Yeah, all those characters.
Peace encampment, yeah.
I interviewed everybody. I got to know them at the time, and I based a play on their characters.
Well, that's
great.
And
I've updated it so that it's more related to the present war.
And you, of course, have written several other pieces, including Home Sweet Homeless.
Home Sweet Homeless, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is a totally different. This is a really dark drama because we know what happened. Those people were brutalized. They were hauled off to the cop shop, and one was assaulted seriously in the jail by kind of vigilantes. And there was difficulty getting hospital treatment for injured protesters. So I wrote a play in honor of what those people withstood, you know?
Really?
And I got some really qualified actors already rehearsing some scenes, but I'm desperately short of a main lead character.
Well, Ray Glock-Grunick is a known actor.
Yeah, I know he is, but he has the family responsibilities.
Well,
and I'm
Nancy
only
is an
aware
even
of.
Better actor. Perhaps she'd be interested in.
He's beyond acting. He's totally real.
So when is this production? Once you get your lead filled, due to see light
of
day.
Yeah, people would have to be available until as late as early August. It might happen before that, but I think it could run that late.
What's the name of the production?
Well, it's Fight Back Productions.
Right, but I mean the name of the show. The name of the show.
It's Can't Stop the Clock, because these events transpired at the clock.
Can't Stop the Clock.
And it's like symbolic that you can't stop the march of time, even if it's a war. It's hard to stop it once it's in motion.
You got it.
Yeah.
Well, so you're putting on an appeal for actors or any specific requirements?
Specifically for a 25 to 40-year-old actor who's good with dialogue and movement, both. There's some physically demanding things that this person has to do. Be a little bit athletic, you know?
Union scale?
Not entirely. Absolutely off the scale. The big zero.
The big zero. In fact, they'll be paying you to be a part of the show.
But an opportunity to work with an experienced producer, director.
Indeed.
Great cast, wonderful atmosphere, and highly skilled people.
Uh-huh. You got a number of people can call if they're interested?
Yeah, sure. They can call. The best is my girlfriend's cell phone because it takes messages.
Go ahead.
234-2067.
234-2067.
What?
Yes, 234-2067.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. And Susan operates that number. That'll
okay.
take a message.
It sounds good, Nick. I will. Well, we are passing on the word here.
So really, anybody, any other people besides actors, And actresses, I might be looking for an actress in the same age range.
Nick,
too.
You know, my suggestion to you on this is to call the voicemail, and you can actually leave this as a PSA.
And a promo.
And they will repeat it again and again. I have limited time, and everybody hates my show anyway, so nobody would pay any attention to anything you
also
say on my show.
Also looking for financial backing, anybody who wants to see a good, strong anti-war drama done in this area. 234-2067. I'll leave it there. Hey. I'll try and tune in again, but I just wanted to get my message out.
Hey, thank you. Do call for a PSA. Do it that way.
I will. Thanks for your toleration.
Okay, man.
Bye-bye, Ray. Bye-bye.
Bye, Nick.
Hey, you're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM. You want to donate some money to us, we want it first. But if you got some left over, kick some down to Nick Whitehead's Productions. And if you're an actor looking to do a production, I guess, as late as October. August, thank you. Give him a call at 234-2067, which is his girlfriend Susan's place. You can also call us here at 427-3772 and chat with Ray, Nancy, and Robert on the issue of the Jones decision, homelessness in Santa Cruz, and anything else that pops in your mind that you better make it relevant or I'll have to cut you off with a 30-second limit. I'm trying to emulate, learn how to be a mayor like some other mayors I know. Ray Glock-Grunike and Nancy Glock-Grunike. I see I have you both at your respective microphones. You have heard the L.A. Times story on this Jones decision. And, of course, everyone in Santa Cruz who's interested in the sleeping ban issue wants to know, does this mean the sleeping ban is dead here? And, of course, the answer is, hell no, it's alive and well, right?
Unfortunately, right. I have basically four topics that I'm going to try covering on Jones. First of all, I want to follow in the footsteps of Mark Rosenbaum and just really praise Jones' opinion to the majority opinion, that is, to the sky. It's a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful opinion. Second, I want to talk about the shelf life of Jones because for reasons I'll explain, it will only be with us for about 9 months to a year. Third, I want to talk about what my prediction is, how the U.S. Supreme Court would rule on the same issues. And fourthly, I want to contrast the ordinance in Los Angeles with the ordinance in Santa Cruz and say what I think the impact of Jones, if it remains the law, will be on the Santa Cruz ordinance.
And I hope, fifthly, you'll be telling us some advice as to how to deal with our sleeping ban here in Santa Cruz. I know you've come up with a number of
I can't give legal advice, I can give political advice. Obviously, we have to agitate.
Correct. Mm-hmm. However, you're also a person who can not give legal advice, but who can talk about, and you are indeed in this program talking about legal realities and examining a legal decision. We have some people have suggested intensive use of the necessity defense, trying to get lawyers appointed by court order for infraction cases for all defendants.
We may have time, depending upon your indulgence and how many callers, what they're interested in. We may have time to cover some of that now, or we may have to do that at a later program.
Okay. Well, you looks like you got a pretty thick-looking... That's the Jones decision in front of you. Thank God.
Right.
That's not your most recent writing on the matter.
Right.
I want to introduce you, Ray, by saying that you have defended literally, is it fair to say, hundreds of camping cases?
Probably scores.
Scores of camping cases. You were particularly active when I came back to town in 1988 and 89, and you actually defended people in misdemeanors. In fact, you even defended...
Actually, that was 70. You're about 10 years older than you admit to.
Well, I'm trying to keep a low profile here. A younger profile, actually. but no, actually, I began a lot of work in 88. Although you were involved with the Scott's Creek Bluff case back in 1977, of course.
Right.
The Christmas seizure of vehicles out at Scott Creek Bluff and the longest misdemeanor trial in Santa Cruz history in 1978, which was the first mass instance of jury nullification.
Yes, it was four of my paragraphs.
Sorry?
That's all right.
I've got bad puns here. We may have to call in the punisher, so watch out if I don't punish you. In any case, you've been doing homeless civil rights work for a long time. You recently abandoned it in favor of absurd Green Party politics, which I will try not to malign you for over much on the air. Green Party locally is the deadest thing since, I don't know, George Bush's conscience. It's kind of hard to say, but that's just my view. But you still maintain an active interest in the civil rights of homeless people in Santa Cruz, right?
Yes. I think going to the first of the four topics, or first of the five topics, I think the best way I can praise the Jones decision is that I'd like to read from parts of it, rather than just by adding my own superlatives. First of all, it has a little quote here from the Los Angeles Police Chief, William Bratton, and I want you to understand that he is sympathetic and compassionate and sensitive to the needs of the homeless, as he expresses in the following quote. Quote, if the behavior is aberrant in the sense that it breaks the law, then there are city ordinances. You arrest them, prosecute them, put them in jail. And if they do it again, you arrest them, prosecute them, and put them in jail. It's that simple. So there we have the law and order without much concern about the law perspective.
The scary perspective, where we, of course, I'm talking about not frightening, but scary, as in Howard Scary, our own chief of police here, might say something similar.
Okay. What I would also like to do is to just quote, you mean faster? Oh, closer. Okay. What I'd like to do is to illustrate the kinds of people and circumstances that the homeless ordinance of Los Angeles was applied against. This is strictly quoting from the opinion as the facts found by the court. And incidentally, what's significant is that these are facts found by the district court judge who ruled against the homeless. So this was not the folks who were trying to bend over backwards to help the homeless, but those who ruled against the homeless, who nonetheless found these facts. Robert Lee Puri is in his early 60s. He has lived in the Skid Row area for four decades. Puri sleeps on the streets because he cannot afford a room in an SRO hotel.
Right, let me interrupt you because I want to point out that I actually read,
you read this entire
description of the last, but I mean, maybe you could summarize it for folks who weren't listening the last time when I was on the air.
Well, at any rate, he had nowhere to sleep, and he was ordered, because he has, as it goes on in some of his description, the welfare that they are given is somewhere around $231 a month, but the cheapest housing, a single SRO housing that they can get is $379 a month. So at best, they can cover a couple of weeks of housing.
Similar to Santa Cruz.
I think it might even be worse than Santa Cruz, but I'm not sure.
Right.
At any rate, let me just maybe get one of the more egregious ones here. One of these fellows had suffered brain injury in a car accident. That's obviously immoral, to suffer a brain injury in a car accident. So he was not able to be employed. Another person had severe kidney problems, which caused swelling of his legs, shortness of breath, making it difficult for him to walk. He stopped to rest on a tree stump for a few moments and was arrested for illegal sitting.
So he could have leaned instead of sat.
It's only allowed to sit on the benches.
Aren't there adequate benches provided? I mean, in Santa Cruz, we have a known plethora of benches, right?
In Santa Cruz, we used to have a lot of places one could sit, but they've erected spikes to make sure that people don't sit in those places anymore.
Well, there are plenty of sidewalk cafes for folks to patronize the local businesses, Ray.
I do want to say that the California acknowledges a necessity defense, which probably all of these people could qualify under. And the court... The Jones case appreciates the fact that we have a necessity defense, and it has a very realistic picture of how much help the necessity defense is to the homeless in practical reality.
And let me interrupt briefly and say that a necessity defense is a defense which usually the prosecution has to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that you're guilty. But in the necessity defense, you have to prove by a preponderance the evidence that you meet all six elements of the necessity defense, which include that you were doing what you were doing was doing be done to prevent a greater evil. You had a reasonable belief that that was the case. And there's a whole series of rather complicated conditions you have to meet, right?
Right. Here is what Jones says about the necessity defense. In footnote 3, quote, as a practical matter, it is questionable how homeless individuals would either know that they could assert a necessity of defense or have the wherewithal to hire an attorney who might so advise them, particularly after being arrested, serving jail time, and losing their belongings. The argument that at trial a homeless individual would have recourse to a necessity defense so as to avoid conviction begs the question why the city arrests homeless individuals during nighttime in the first place. other than out of indifference or meanness.
And, of course, this was the conundrum that you and I were working on last year, actually a bunch of us were working on, when we were questioning how to best challenge the sleeping ban ordinance right. in Santa Cruz, because it had been found by the California Supreme Court that camping laws aren't facially unconstitutional because some people, it's appropriate to regulate camping, and they don't have a need to be sleeping or to be camping, right?
In fact, my favorite summary of that issue is put out by Anatole France, who says, "The law in its majesty forbids the rich as well as the poor from stealing bread and sleeping under bridges.
And begging in the streets," the complete quote. Yeah. Actually, I got that quote from the famous 80s activist Shannon Cassamo at one point.
Okay, and so the in the Toby case, the Cal Supreme Court upheld the ordinance against the facial attack on the grounds that it might be it's perfectly constitutional when applied against the rich, and we would have to have an entirely different litigation with thousands of, or tens of thousands of dollars more effort expended to see if by any possibility any poor were prosecuted under this ordinance.
Actually, I remember that was the Santa Ana camping law, because there was a time in the mid-90s when the Santa Ana District Court had thrown out, a state court, had thrown out the camping ordinance as a violation of, it was cruel and unusual punishment, it was, I think, violated the right to travel, and also substantive due process, maybe even, yeah, both under the 14th and 5th Amendments. And that's always, it's always been a little mysterious to me what substantive due process means. At some point we can talk about that in layman's terms, because you understand cruel and unusual punishment, that makes sense. Substantive due process, I mean, he's not doing whatever that is. But the fact is that at that time, we began intensive protests in Santa Cruz, which then led to the downtown ordinances of 1994, which criminalized a lot of protest activities. For example, it's illegal to have a table in most places now. You can't have it in front of a sidewalk cafe. You can't have a protest at night involving a structure, because Wanton Dave Jacobs and Robert Flory, activists during that time, set up little cardboard structures, not big ones, but small ones, which to try to dramatize the very thing that you heard Nick Whitehead, who's looking for actors in a play, to dramatize both an anti-war message and a message against harassment and criminalization of the poor. So there was this decision that initially provided us with a lot of hope, but as you pointed out, the Tobe case, when it reached the Supreme Court, they said, oh, well, there's some people that, you know, that it might well be appropriate for, so you have to go back and show in any particular case that there is a need and a necessity. And when such a case did come up, the Eichhorn case, they didn't throw out camping laws, but they threw out the judge's attempt to say you can't use a necessity defense and require that in every camping case, if I'm not mistaken, Ray.
You are quite correct in this.
You be allowed, you have to be able to use a necessity defense. But as Judge Wardlaw, I believe it is, points out in the Jones case that we're looking at here today, that's an awfully onerous requirement for an impoverished defendant, right?
Finally, she, that is Judge Wardlaw, says in these two sentences, which is a beautiful summary of this whole issue, "Finally, one must question the policy of arresting, jailing, and prosecuting individuals whom the city attorney concedes cannot be convicted due to a necessity defense. If there is no offense for which the homeless can be convicted, is the city admitting that all that comes before us is merely police harassment of a vulnerable population?"
Now, we came up with the same question 9 months ago, right? I remember talking about it in somebody's backyard.
Yes.
I think it was Becky's backyard. And the issue was, you know, it costs a lot of money to challenge laws like this. Do you go to state court? Do you go to federal court? Do you challenge it facially? Do you challenge it as applied? We looked at different circumstances. You came up with an idea of, actually, I think it was even being considered in San Diego in another case, of challenging enforcement practices,
right,
which is exactly what happened here. This is not an attack on the law's constitutionality, because the law is still considered constitutional throughout most of the city. But in the 50-block, I said 500 earlier, but I think it's a 50-block area, Skid Row, it is not, there's not an injunction against enforcing it, but there is an effect, a ruling, right, that this has to go to trial immediately for that.
Fortunately, so that we can all respect Mr. Anatole France, the injunction does not keep the city from enforcing this against rich people. It's only against the homeless as defined by the federal government. Furthermore, it's only under the circumstances where the city, or where there is not adequate housing at the price that the homeless can afford.
And since we have adequate housing in Santa Cruz, that's no problem, right?
I've heard somebody in Fantasyland suggests that, but I haven't heard anybody else say it. As Nancy pointed out a bit ago, in the city of Los Angeles, they are some 50, in the city of Los Angeles as a whole, they are some 50,000 beds short of what is required by the homeless. Did not have a problem, according to the majority, in proving that there was an unavailability. And then they even narrowed it further, saying that for the non-handicapped, this injunction only applies during the nighttime hours, which I think they defined as between 9 p.m. and 6:30 a.m. or something like that. As to the handicapped, they could not apply it during any hours.
Now, this was as proposed by the
plaintiffs? This is as ruled by the majority.
Right, but was this based upon... I don't know if it was proposed.
I don't know who had proposed.
I know for some people who are considering using this as an example and a basis for seeking an injunction locally, they're looking for the pleadings, the original pleadings in this case. Yeah.
Now I want to get to some technicalities about this. Go ahead.
As I understand it, the plaintiffs had asked for an injunction against enforcement of that regulation within the Skid Row area between the hours of 9 p.m. and 6:30 a.m. against the homeless and an injunction against enforcement at all if the person was handicapped. And the district court originally gave a summary judgment in favor of the city against that requested injunction.
That's correct.
And this appeal now reverses that and supports injunctive relief.
So where does it stand? Is there an injunction in force, or is it going back to court?
No.
What's the story?
Well, here's where it stands legally.
No legal advice.
No, I'm only commenting on the
law.
Good
point.
I'm not
good
giving
point.
Any legal advice. Certainly,
I've got my eye on you, Gronick.
They will have to hire their attorney with their ample funds to give them legal advice.
Indeed.
The injunction, what the court ruled, the appeal court, 2-1, they ruled, they reversed the denial of the injunction, and they said, you gave the wrong summary judgment. We're not going to remand this for retrial. We're going to grant summary judgment in the opposite direction, in favor of the homeless. So therefore, it's our judgment that you will have to grant this injunction. However, between now and that taking place,
they can appeal.
The city has a right to request, to petition for a rehearing.
En banc.
And more particularly, an en banc rehearing.
Explain what that is.
Okay. Now, here's the way it works. This was a decision by three judges, two regular judges and one of the Ninth Circuit.
That's
and
a,
one was
a federal,
substitute
a
judge.
A federal court we're talking
right,
about.
Right, a federal sure. appeal court.
Right.
And one of the three judges was a visiting judge who was a retired district court judge. Mm-hmm. And the district court judge sided with Judge Wardlaw, and Judge Reimer, one of the regular judges, went ahead and dissented. So we have a sampling of two out of a total of 35 active Ninth Circuit judges. And the typical panel is three. Now, what an en banc court usually means in most courts of appeal is the whole court gets to decide, because most courts of appeal have about a dozen or so judges. But in the Ninth Circuit is so huge that we define it differently. And so what happens is that when somebody requests, as I have absolutely no doubt the city of Los Angeles will request a rehearing, their deadline, incidentally, is April 29th for doing so, 15 days after this April 14th decision.
Thank you.
All 35 regular full-time active Ninth Circuit judges will be polled, and it will take a vote, I believe, of 11 of them to grant an en banc rehearing. And then that means less than a third can decide to grant the rehearing. I think, given the fact that we had one dissenter, I think it's highly, highly probable that they will be able to come up, the dissenters will be able to come up with at least 11 votes to grant an en banc hearing.
Now, before you go any further, finish up.
And then they do a random selection amongst the 35 regularly sitting judges, and they pick 13 of them to serve as the en banc court. And that decision will supersede this decision.
How long will it take?
And I would expect it will take from 8 to 12 months before we get that. So this has a shelf life of about 8 to 12 months that we can waive this particular decision and say this is the law in the Ninth Circuit.
But it is right now the case that summary judgment has been granted.
Right, but it does not affect even Los Angeles.
But it does affect 50 square blocks.
No, not even there, because that judgment is on hold until after the rehearing rights are exercised. So it does not affect anything. No, it will, if a rehearing is granted. So if a rehearing is granted, and I believe that it will be granted, then it will have no legal effect even on the parties, and furthermore, for anybody else in the state or in the Ninth Circuit to go ahead and raise a case, to be inspired by this case and say, great, we'll do our case, it will take them a lot longer than that 8 to 12 months to put together such a case. So realistically, the effect of this decision is to inspire us to agitate. It is not having any effect whatsoever yet on the courts. And it will not, because it will be superseded by an en banc opinion. Then,
so let me ask you before we go any further. Even as we speak now, this decision is not enforced.
Correct.
Even prior to the city's asking for a rehearing.
Correct. Because it is not itself the injunction. It is a judgment that the lower court, the district court, should grant the injunction. But that is held in abeyance while the city is exercising its rehearing rights.
Or deciding whether to exercise.
Or to exercise. Of course, they could always decide, we like the decision, we've seen the light, we're going to go along with it, but that is not Los Angeles that
Well, you know, it's interesting. Mike Rodkin has always said, no city in the United States allows homeless people to sleep on its streets. But in reading the L.A. Times, I find that a former mayor, Hahn, is quoted as allowing homeless people to sleep on L.A. streets for many years prior to 2003, when there was, of course, active involvement by the ACLU. This case was actually taken 2002, 2003, and it's taken 3 years to wind its way through the courts. I had never been aware that there was a situation in Los Angeles. I've been aware of the situation in Miami, where there was the Pottinger decision that required there be adequate shelter before a police officer even approached a homeless person and asked them questions about so-called life-sustaining misdemeanors like camping or covering up with a blanket or even doing a fire. I've heard about Austin, Texas, and Portland, Oregon's camping and sleeping ordinances being overturned. So I knew Rodkin was mistaken.
Well, I last checked the streets of San Francisco on February 26th of this year at around midnight, and there were plenty of people sleeping on the streets when I was looking about.
Right. Now, but my point was that I had never heard that it was officially declared by a mayor that this was acceptable policy in some parts of the city and that was a policy he'd followed. Maybe he was not lying. I mean, maybe he was lying or not telling the truth about his own policy. I take it you haven't heard anything about Los Angeles having an unusually tolerant, in fact, quite the opposite of what I've heard about. It was my right. impression of the LAPD, though I haven't got, and indeed, my contacts with the LA Coalition, they've never mentioned that there was an enlightened policy by the mayor down in Skid Row, though I did hear at the time of the Democratic Convention in 2000 that the homeless were allowed a 2 or 3 block area, maybe it was larger, where they could sleep without being harassed, mainly because there were so many of them that it was seemed to be futile to go after them. I mean, where are they going to go? You can put them in jail, you could dump them in the desert. I guess we could send them to Mexico, make them honorary illegal immigrants.
I'm not sure. Then, after the Ninth Circuit en banc rehearing takes place, then the losing party gets to go up to the United States Supreme Court. And I predict that it is likely that the U.S. Supreme Court will, in fact, grant certiority to this case.
Which means they'll hear it.
Which means that they will hear it. There are two very, very important issues in this case. One of them on the issue that we've been focusing on in terms of what is a cruel and unusual punishment. You said it's very clear what cruel and unusual punishment is. Well, in law, it is not all clear. There are all kinds of ways of finessing that issue, and there's some very important issues here in law that the U.S. Supreme Court, I believe, will take up. And second, there's a procedural issue of standing that we now have a conflict between the Ninth Circuit in the Jones case And another case in the Fifth Circuit, which is New Orleans. You all remember New Orleans is a city that used to be. New Orleans went the other way, and New Orleans and the Fifth Circuit would not be willing to allow Jones or any of his co-plaintiffs to even come into court to raise this case. And so,
tell us a little bit about that. Do you know much about that case? Or
I don't know the particulars of the case, but I know the issue of standing. Basically, what standing means is, does this particular litigant or plaintiff have the right to come into court to raise this issue? And the Fifth Circuit case, the name of which I'm forgetting at the moment, but it's discussed in I'll be able to find it here in just a second. It's discussed in this Jones case. Well, let me look for it afterwards. They take the position that you cannot raise a cruel and unusual punishment claim until after you've been convicted and we see what the formal sentence is.
I know that's the traditional view on cruel and unusual punishment. Of course, Wardlaw in this case pointed out that the case from which that dictum came
was an actual decision.
Well, it was a decision, but there are three prongs of the decision, two of which talk about you can only talk about something violating the Eighth Amendment, cruel and unusual punishment, after they've been convicted. But the third does talk about status crimes and laws that by their very formation are cruel and unusual
Correct.
Punishment.
By the way, the name of that case in the Fifth Circuit is Johnson versus City of Dallas.
Thank you.
It's a case that came out of Texas, went to the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals in New Orleans. What Wardlaw, she does a brilliant analysis. She's absolutely correct as far as I'm concerned, but not according to the Fifth Circuit. She says there are really three kinds of claims, three distinct kinds of claims that are permissible under the cruel and unusual punishment. One is, what kinds of punishment can you inflict? So it's unconstitutional, for example, for us to crop off ears and do things like, or to chop off hands, as you have under Sharia law. That would be considered to be cruel and unusual punishment under the U.S. Constitution. The second kind of cruel and unusual punishment is whether something is disproportionate, whether the sentence is too great in light of the relative minor nature of the crime. Both of those, Jones acknowledges, are strictly post-conviction involving the formality of the sentence.
So the three strikes law decision that was mentioned in the LA Times article, where the court found that even though it was a minor charge, the three strikes was not disproportionate, even though that was done after a conviction.
Right, that was on the merits. But on the standing issue, they had standing to reach. Now, to illustrate, under the Ingraham case, if, for example, a school, Ingraham involves spanking in schools, and corporal punishment. They said that doesn't involve the cruel and unusual punishment clause because it's not part of the criminal process. So, for example, if we were to have a school that's chopped off the hands of children for stealing pencils in the classroom, cruel and unusual punishment clause would not be involved because it's not a formal part of the criminal process. They say, well, that's not very nice. It may involve some problems with substantive due process, but it does not involve the cruel and unusual punishment clause.
Substantive due process means?
A substantive due process means things which the government will not be allowed to do, no matter how nice they are in their procedures in terms of fairness. This goes beyond, this violates the very norms of civilization to allow this.
Give an example of a very important and famous substantive due process case.
Well, the initial one of my favorites, is Meyer versus Nebraska, where Nebraska put people in jail for speaking in the German language.
Well, yeah, we don't want the damn Germans in our town.
That's right. This is post-World War I, had a lot of bigotry led by President Wilson in those days. At any rate.
Mm-hmm. To put someone in jail for speaking German would be a violation of substantive due process.
Right. Okay. And we've decided that, and recently Turkey has caught up. We no longer put in jail for speaking Kurdish, for example.
Oh, well, there you are. See, who says we're not moving forward?
Right. But there's a third area which Wardlaw says has a different rule in standing. The third area is, what kinds of conduct can you criminalize at all? And she said, by criminalize, we don't just mean formally sentence. We mean going all the way back to and even before the point of arrest. You can't even stigmatize it by calling it a crime. And so she said that, and in this instance, the classic case is Robinson versus California, where it was
the drug addiction.
The drug addiction.
Making it a crime to be an addict.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Correct. And they said, you know, you can't do that. Mm-hmm. And she says it doesn't have anything to do with the sentence. It has to do with you cannot make that a crime. And that's the branch of cruel and unusual punishment jurisprudence that the Jones case is going on. You cannot criminalize it. And therefore, we don't have to wait until you're issuing a formal sentence. You cannot even go to the point of arrest. You cannot go to the point of seizing somebody's blankets in the name of seizing evidence. You cannot even...
You mean as Lieutenant Clark did back in 1996?
Yes.
But Lieutenant Clark's answer was very simple. Why did he do that? Because I can.
Well, he will probably be able to continue doing it until the Supreme Court addresses this issue. So what's my prediction on the U.S. Supreme Court? Actually, I have lots of sad and bad things to say about the U.S. Supreme Court, but I am cautiously optimistic on this one. And it's because of the countdown. When we lost our swing vote of O'Connor, Sandra Day O'Connor, our new swing vote person became Donald Kennedy. Anthony Kennedy.
Mm-hmm.
Anthony Scalia. It's Donald Kennedy, I believe. But I may be wrong. Anyways, Kennedy.
I think it's Anthony Kennedy.
I may be going through some brain...
I think it's Donald Rumsfeld, actually.
Okay.
We don't want him on the Supreme Court.
So, at any rate, Kennedy is bad on lots and lots and lots of things, but there are certain issues upon which he is very, very good on. Kennedy is the passionate author of the U.S. Supreme Court decision, a 5-4 decision that made it illegal to criminalize consensual adult homosexual behavior, conduct. And he's absolutely strong on that issue. I think he's strong on the issue of criminalization of basic human activities that are essential to life. And on this issue, I am optimistic that Donald Kennedy, the swing voter on the Supreme Court, Kennedy.
It's Donald Duck and Anthony, or sorry, Kennedy, and whoever he is.
Yeah. I'm losing fast my credibility for being an expert in the law.
Well, not
here.
Necessarily. I could be wrong, but I think it's. But anyway, the point is here now. My point, of course, is what can be? How can this decision be leveraged locally?
Well, that's where I was getting to at this point. There are two differences between the Santa Cruz ordinance and the Los Angeles ordinance. And the issue I want to talk about is, are these differences material in terms of if the Jones opinion becomes the final ruling of the U.S. Supreme Court, are they material? The first difference is that the punishment under Santa Cruz, for the first offense at least, is an infraction. Theoretically, you're not put in jail for it, assuming you have good ID. Assuming that you go and do all of your community service hours, assuming that you show up to court in time, you're not put in jail for it. You're only fined an amount that would be far beyond what you're allowed to be, what you have available.
So apparently the police have the right to custodially jail you arbitrarily, now under infractions, according to what Kate Wells was telling me about a recent decision that expanded the Texas v. Johnson or something, decision in Texas about
that may be true
the soccer mom who got ticketed.
That may be true as a matter of federal constitutional right, but I don't think it's true as a matter of California law. She may know something that I don't know here, but...
But in any case, it's a more minor crime than it is in
right.
Los Angeles.
And whereas in Los Angeles, it's a misdemeanor. You can go to jail for up to 6 months, etc. Now, what is the significance of that different grade of criminal offense? Well, under the third branch of cruel and unusual punishment, we have it cannot be criminalized at all. It is absolutely immaterial whether you have the criminalization as a little criminalization or big criminalization.
Okay, hang on here. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Ray Glock-Grunike and Uncle Robert. Turn down your radio because you will get very confused unless you do.
Yeah, I just did that.
Okay.
Well, Robert, when I was protesting the sleeping ban with you, I would say 8 or 10 years ago, we all did get arrested.
Right.
For, I believe, not signing the ticket.
Right.
That's correct.
Right. Now, that's, they will arrest you simply to, it's not a, I guess it can be considered obstructing an officer or...
No, actually, you have to be given the opportunity to agree to appear.
Right.
But
right.
If you refuse to, if you don't have valid ID, or if you actually refuse to sign the ticket, they can then take you in and hold you until your court appearance.
Yes.
Or until the jail decides to release
but
you.
But that's considered to be a voluntary waiver of your right not to be jailed.
True.
In the law.
True that.
You can also be asked in these days to be taken before a magistrate if there's a magistrate serving to...
Yeah, right.
If it's an infraction. We actually have been done that in a couple of cases, but the magistrate, of course, almost invariably finds that there's cause to hold you.
Yeah.
But you can do that. Before being taken to jail, you can request, and there is now provision actually in the... on the forms that the Santa Cruz County deputies use to be taken to a magistrate. Were you informed of your right to be taken to a magistrate? And that means not to be booked. That means to be taken directly to a magistrate.
Right.
And so that's something which actually Kate Wells and Richard Quigley were able to get put into the local practices.
Right. Well, let me hang up and keep on listening because
okay.
I like the show. It's good.
Thank you. Thanks, Crow.
So then the other difference is that the Santa Cruz ordinance doesn't prohibit sleeping at all hours. It's only the nighttime hours.
Correct, from 11 to 8:30 in the morning.
Right. And here is very interesting. It's not all clear what the significance of this is going to be. It could end up being a major difference. But I want to point out that the relief that was granted by this Ninth Circuit, unfortunately, there was no discussion of this. But the relief that was actually granted was the injunction was that they couldn't enforce it between 9 p.m. and 6:30 a.m. Had the issue of hours been immaterial, then the relief that should have been granted would be to say, you have to have an 8-hour or a 9-hour window, and we'll allow the city of Los Angeles to pick whatever window of hours it wishes. But the Ninth Circuit didn't do that. It said, you will not enforce this during nighttime hours. So even though it was not discussed explicitly, there is implicit the consciousness of the biological fact that ordinarily most of us have a need to be doing our sleeping at night.
And not just biologically, but economically, too, in most cases.
Right. And in fact,
jobs work during the day.
One of the things used at Guantanamo... soften up people for interrogation is to reverse their sleeping hours from the nighttime to the daytime, because it is recognized that this has a detrimental effect on the ability of one's mental orientation, and so that is incorporated in the non-torture protocol of the Guantanamo interrogation. So. There is an implicit recognition of that by the Ninth Circuit, by the majority of the Ninth Circuit panel here, when they issued their particularized hours. But unfortunately, that was not discussed. And any subsequent case, if this remains a precedent, which I predict it will not, will be able to say, oh, that was a mere dictum. It doesn't count because it wasn't really analyzed and deliberated upon and argued.
Well, it's interesting that they did, in making their decision, they qualified it to say, we aren't finding this law in Los Angeles says you can't sit, lie, or sleep. Is it?
Yes, sit, lie, or sleep.
Sit, lie, or sleep anywhere in the city on any public property.
It doesn't say that. Notice there's an asymmetry because while the homeless are not permitted to sit, lie, or sleep.
You can if you're watching a parade.
Police officers are allowed to lie as long as they're in court.
And some people are allowed to pun even over the radio, but not too frequently.
Now, I want to say on the hours of sleep, there's a California Supreme Court case that is relevant here, and it has not yet been brought to bear in the higher courts, but The county of Sacramento used to have a provision in its general assistance program by which they required everybody to go ahead and who was on GA to be in particular almshouses. And these almshouses enforced sleeping hours of you had to be in your beds by, I think it was 10 o'clock at night. And you didn't have to be asleep, so I shouldn't say sleeping hours, but at least bedtime hours. You had to be in bed by 10 o'clock. I don't know whether the lights were out or weren't out, but whatever. And the California Supreme Court ruled that that was a violation of substantive due process.
Right, that was back in the 70s when you actually had a liberal
Yeah, right.
Court.
That's under the Rosebud Court. Right. And that, and there's a question of that it was a violation of one's liberty interests to have the government dictate to you when you should sleep.
Right.
It was even when the government was conforming to the usual patterns of sleep, of allowing you to sleep at nighttime. Here you have not only the government dictating when the homeless shall sleep, but dictating that they should have to sleep at a time and under a pattern that would be mentally disorienting to them. Apparently they feel that they've got too much of a head start on the rest of us for getting employment. They just want
getting
to
back to Santa Cruz, which of course is the issue for me, and actually getting back to some of the notes I made on this case. Maybe I can run them by you while you're here. By the way, you're listening to Free Radio 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norris. This is Bathrobs, Piers, Broadsides in the studio with me. Man about puns, Ray Glock-Grunike. Hopefully he's left his puns outside. I'm glad to see that he's sticking to the legal issues. We're talking about the Jones decision. Edward Jones and five other defendants, or plaintiffs, I should say, successfully sued the LAPD and the city to get a summary judgment that they are entitled to be able to sleep at night in 50 square blocks of Skid Row. Boy, isn't that... It took only 3 years to do it, folks. But what I found interestingly, as I read through this decision, was a statement, and this was actually in the, in Wardlaw's decision, as she went over the facts. She said, in the late 1980s, James K. Hahn, who served as L.A. city attorney from 1985 to 2001, and subsequently as mayor, refused to prosecute the homeless for sleeping in public unless the city provided them with an alternative to the streets. So I guess, you know, again, I'm looking back at this. Was this an unusually lenient policy in L.A. that I hadn't heard of? And maybe so, because I hadn't heard of it. But what it may have meant was they got arrested, but they didn't get prosecuted for it. So, what that meant is they just get repeatedly arrested. And I'm being referred to this. Right. This is, I have no idea how accurate this is, even though it's in a court decision, whether it's true or false. Anybody who has any information, call in, let me know. Was there really Robert Myers angel figure down there in L.A.? Robert Myers was the Santa Monica city attorney who was, in fact, a documented angel, refused to write laws criminalizing homeless feeding in the parks, stood off the city council in Santa Monica for 10 years, wrote a sleeping ban provision that actually was revolutionary for its time. It allowed people to sleep in residential neighborhoods in vehicles and it established very difficult standards to drive them away. And yet it also allowed them to be forced to move on complaint. So it was an interesting statute. His name is Bob Myers, and he's one of my legal heroes. A little more difficult to deal with in person, but a nice guy, actually. Anyway, I don't know about Hahn. I was wondering about that. We're talking, as Ray points out, about a law which is a misdemeanor. And again, I found it interesting to look at the necessity defense question.
Can I get some input on this necessity defense?
Sure.
What I think it's especially, and this is another way in which the Jones case will help us, even in the meantime, before it is legally of effect, because it points out so eloquently the futility, or well, not the futility, the fact that it's an illusion that it is really helpful.
Let me point out what a necessity defense is. The court, if you're doing a necessity defense, the court must instruct the jury on a necessity defense when there is evidence sufficient to establish that the defendant violated the law, one, to prevent a significant evil. 2, with no adequate alternative. 3, without creating a greater danger than the one avoided. 4, with a good faith belief in the necessity. And 5, with a belief such being objectively reasonable. And finally, under circumstances in which the defendant did not substantially contribute to the emergency. That's 6 conditions. That's hard to prove, right?
The thing is, it's hard to prove when you have an attorney. It is virtually impossible to prove without the benefit of an attorney. And, of course, these people do not have the funds to hire an attorney.
And would it even be possible to even consider it in infraction cases because you can't take it to a jury, you have to take it to a judge?
Correct. No, but supposedly, since we only have fair judges, of course.
Of course, yes.
That's not the obstacle. But the obstacle is that you don't have the attorney to present the evidence because it has to be done through all the formal evidence. So this is what I call a barmecidal feast. And I have there's a reason why I call it a barmecidal feast. For those of you who have read The 1001 Nights, the Arabian classic, there's this one tale in which this person who's begging for alms is brought in to see a rich person. The rich person says, I'm so offended that there could be a hungry person in my city. Let me bring you food. And he brings invisible food to the man as a mocking of the poor. Uh-huh. And he brings plate after plate after plate after plate of saying, we will give you this and we will give you that and we will give you this, but of course it's all unattainable because it doesn't exist. That's what the necessity defense is in California law when it's applied to the homeless. It's a barmecidal feast. You are told you have all these lavish rights, and the only trick is that you need to have the money to hire an attorney to have the opportunity to go through the labyrinth of procedure that it takes to establish the necessity defense. If you succeed at that, if you are the one case out of 100,000 that the ACLU or some other organization can go ahead and put the tens of thousands of dollars in and say, yes, we will do that to prevent you from being fined a few hundred dollars, then you can succeed at the necessity defense as was done in the ICORN case. Mm-hmm. But anybody else who happens to just be out there poor, hungry, and homeless and harassed by the police, it is a barmecidal feast. It is a total illusion that this defense exists.
Now, in Santa Cruz, actually, the specific situation for people who are faced with this is to... traditionally, for the last few years, they've been saying, go to the homeless service center, get yourself a letter that says the shelter was full that night, bring it to court, and they'll dismiss the case. Although I haven't seen, I don't know that homeless people are widely advised of this, because I've seen people in court pleading guilty to these cases. And I'm also, I don't know that, if this were really part of the court process, I would think that people like referee Kim Basket, who I believe probably handles the overwhelming majority of these cases, she's the new judge, meat grinder Mulligan, as I used to call him, the referee. She's the new referee in the basement of the county building, traffic court. She would advise, if a homeless defendant came before her, she would say, if you can show that you have evidence that there is no shelter for you that night, go get it. I'll give you a continuance, and we can suspend the sentence, or we can rule you not guilty or drop the case. I'm not aware that she does this. It's something, of course, that should be done as a matter of course. I think given this 2-to-1 decision, not necessarily because you pointed out it's been suspended, but there is an indication.
I think that the Jones case will be useful, even in the meantime, it will be useful to go ahead and get more enlightened practices along these lines. And Ms. Basket may very well be amenable to that. I would encourage people to go ahead and show her this particular language,
maybe you could select, Ray, the appropriate language, give it to me, and I'll put it in a flyer form.
It is
don't do it here.
Three.
Yeah, footnote 3. Well,
footnote 3.
We can talk about it after the show, because I was suggesting people show it to police officers who are about to give them tickets.
Right, right. And also that other sentence at the end of the discussion of standing, which talks about why arrest if it's not for purposes of harassment.
Other things people can do, of course, is the Armory, having closed last Saturday or last Friday night, realize that we have a situation where tent cities have been proposed by some and are probably the best form of direct action. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Ray and Robert.
Hey, Robert, this is Crow again. One more
Crow
time.
Again. Caw, caw to you,
ha,
Crow.
Ha, ha.
So what's up?
So anyway, what if you voluntarily want to be homeless? Are you screwed forever?
That's a very good question,
Under
Ray.
Under this decision, you are.
Yes.
Well, actually not screwed if you really are voluntary, because that would be your form of preference.
Yes, it is.
Not have
because
this...
I don't believe in buildings. I don't believe in housing because it's destruction of Mother Earth, and I'd rather sleep on the curb or wherever in a bush rather than to participate. So
well,
none of these laws would actually help me, right?
You're in good company. I'm forgetting his name right now, but this the fellow who was had a tent on UCSC. Who
Anders Korm.
No, I'm thinking of the fellow who was very tall. He had a radio program on KZSC.
Let me hang up and listen to you guys again, all right?
Okay.
And he...
Bob.
I think we're thinking of the same fellow. At any rate, what a lot of people didn't realize is that he was actually a very wealthy gentleman. He was one of the heirs of the Kellogg fortune. And he chose to be homeless because he chose to devote his life to radical activism and radical education.
But, you know, we're also talking about people violating laws who are poor, but who are some of them voluntarily, some not. So a lot of the people in Scotts Creek Bluff were not all involuntarily homeless. The group of people who were forced out of Santa Cruz in the late 70s and then arrested en masse with their vehicles confiscated, what was it, in December 19th, 1977?
Yeah. There's a liberty interest with respect to those people that's very real.
You defended them. They were counterculture people.
Right.
And they didn't argue that they were poor and had no place to go, or did they?
It varied because their circumstances varied. But the thing is that this is in pre-Bush America. It's even in pre-Clinton America.
Pre-Reagan America.
We can't. Yes, Reagan's the one who helped to bring this about. So we are today, the homeless are not the esoteric romantics, and that's not as a pejorative. They are primarily the involuntary poor. And the fact that some people have found a very meaningful existence is to their credit. I'm glad that that happens. And there are important liberty interests that are involved there. And we may be able to ultimately find some kind of legal defense around those liberty interests. But those are different from the kinds of equal protection issues. Those are different from the kinds of cruel and unusual punishment issues that afflict the poor.
Now,
involuntarily harassed.
Is there more that you had wanted to say? Have you gotten out your four different points, or do you think you've? Because we have about 3 or 4 minutes left. I was going to invite folks to tune in again on Sunday at 9:30. Maybe we can grab Ray again or Nancy for who's fondling that globe over there of the world. I think she's got conquest in mind, perhaps. Maybe not. Maybe nurturing the world is the idea. We have a supervisor,
or even saving it.
Indeed. A potential supervisor running, potential candidate for supervisors is Christopher Crone here in Santa Cruz. Christopher, as you may remember, was mayor of Santa Cruz in 2002. He's on the council for 4 years. I'm going to play you an interchange between Christopher Crone and David Silva, another activist from 1999, because I promised Christopher Crone I would play this. I'm about an hour late, but I want to play it anyway because I want to get your comments, however brief.
This is a request, right?
I don't know. But I'm going to compel. Here we go.
You're on the air with Christopher Crone and Robert Norris.
Yeah, who knows when these guys are going to get the balls to deal with the police. But at least the promise they made a year ago to do something about the sleeping ban. When are you going to repeal the sleeping ban?
There's a question for you. Chris, any thoughts on that one?
Well, you were around, David, when the sleeping ban came up the first time in this last past year and the many meetings that took place. And I personally... Didn't necessarily go along or feel good. I won't say go along. Feel good about the way it turned out. But I also think that you have 7 council members. I do think that we put it on the agenda. It was an agenda item that wouldn't have been there hadn't there been an election. And the repeal of the sleeping ban, I think, depends on where the homeless task force is going to go to and what recommendations get made to the council. I want to see people have a place to sleep. Well, you know that you and I agree,
Chris,
on a
hang
lot
on a,
of
hang on a second.
As far as a safe
hang
place
a, you,
to sleep. So we both agree, and I just want to answer the question, Robert.
Sure, sure.
So we both agree on those, and I think a lot of other people do. I think also is educating a lot of other parts of Santa Cruz who we would like to bring on board, and I think that if you're looking for the city council necessarily to do what you just said, that might not be the place.
No, I think he's asking you if you are going to take action this winter to change the sleeping sections of the camping ordinance, when already your homeless issues task force over 2 months ago has called for the repeal of the entire camping ordinance. And I don't see, it seems disingenuous, Chris, for you to say you're waiting for the recommendations of the homeless issues. You know what the recommendation is. It was presented to City Council 2 weeks ago. Actually, I think it was more like 4 weeks ago. And it was passed the month previous to that. So what is this kind of talk? I mean, I can understand you're saying, well, I favor ending the sleeping ordinance, but I'm a minority on the council. That's a legitimate position. Are you saying you do or you don't favor it?
I think we spent a lot of time, Robert, talking about this issue. I think there's a lot of genuine concern on the part of council
members. What's your position, Chris? What's your position on this, please?
Well, my priority list is getting more beds for people to sleep in. I think that we definitely.
What about the 500 to 1,500 people outside? Should they be criminalized each night?
Single
homeless
men.
Can you give
me
an answer?
We also need more shelter for women and single moms.
Should people be criminalized at night tonight while they're sleeping? Yes or no, please? Or maybe. Give me an answer to that.
Should people be criminalized?
Right. $54 fine. That's what your council, that's what you voted for in March of 1999 this spring. Should that fine be retained or should that be eliminated? Should people be able to sleep at night without being arrested?
Well, Robert, if I could go back to those transcripts, and I wouldn't mind, you know, if you wanted to.
Can't
do
you give
that
me a yes or
point,
no answer on that one, Chris? I mean, have we reached the point where a year later you can't give me a simple answer to that question?
We talked extensively about this at the time.
Sad.
And I also brought up about.
So wait a minute. So let's. I mean, I really see. I feel that you probably do believe the sleeping ban should be repealed. I mean, but you're not saying so. So every time you evade the question, you let people believe that you don't believe that. Now, can't we get you to say that people should be allowed to sleep at night without being arrested somewhere?
I guess I think the question. I've said this before on various occasions. Sure, I agree with you, but
right.
I'm trying
okay,
to figure
well,
out
that's nice,
what
that's
you
good.
Want to hear, because I feel like you've asked me this question so many times and we've talked about it.
I want to hear
occasions.
A member of the city council standing up for basic human rights for homeless people in a public forum, like the radio station that we're on now. I'd like to see it at city council. That's what I want to hear. I want to hear it repeatedly until the council moves in that direction. And I think that when you made that very, very courageous stand, and that's why you're here on the radio station today, Chris, around
what
shoulder
was
tap.
That?
Shoulder tap.
Oh,
you stood against the majority of the council. You were the only member of the council that voted in favor of what most of us feel is the appropriate position, not criminalizing young people, just like we don't want to criminalize homeless people. That's the reason that a lot of us voted for you and your fellow candidates. That's the hope we had, the Catherine Byers that was sadly disappointed for throughout the last year. We have an incoming caller. The question is, what are the three biggest issues, Chris? And we have a caller. We're probably going to be kicked out of the studio, but I know we will shortly. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hey, Robert. Hey, keep up the good journalist. That's great. I love the interview. I'm hanging up. Bye.
Thanks. What do you think, Ray? Any final thoughts on this?
First of all, I appreciate, whether it be Chris Cohn or anybody else, the necessity of us constantly trying to make them get a straight answer out of our public officials and out of our candidates to public office. And I'm sure that there probably were some folks who are frustrated, including yourself, with getting straight answers out of me when I was a candidate, but keep up the effort. And finally, on the sleeping ban, the camping ban, and the don't stay in your car more than 10 minutes ban.
15 minutes.
Is it 15
minutes?
That's
not exaggerated.
So, okay. Then just agitate, because you cannot afford, our lives cannot afford to wait for the courts to come to the rescue.
Or the politicians, it appears.
Or the politicians.
Thanks, Ray. I appreciate your taking the time to be on the air tonight. I know that it's really rare when you do have the time, because you're taking care of a disabled son, you're engaging in struggling for a rent, to make rent, and to, what else are you struggling to do? And you want to put out a pitch for money on the air, perhaps?
Well, I've missed a recent deadline on my reinstatement, so my next window of opportunity is going to be next August or September.
So we don't have to worry about you becoming a shyster before next...
Not quite yet. I'm in danger of doing other kinds of mischief in the meantime.
Indeed. Well, Ray, thank you. And again, if you want to pull together some quotes for
I'm
me...
I'm actually not even seeking rent anymore. I'm a recent homeowner. I'm in a low-income old folks home now. So
one of us old folks, eh,
right,
Ray?
Right, one of those old folks.
Well, this is good. We hope to have you again. I hope to have you again on the air. And I also hope you... You can perhaps give us more information, some more thoughts, and how we can proceed. Because I think this seems to be, even though you've pointed out how circumscribed this Jones decision is,
it's going to be helpful.
It can well be helpful if we can find some way to proceed. I think it's going to, first of all, it has gotten local civil liberties groups interested, a little more interested, though not interested enough to come out of their ivory castles much. Although we did get Don Zimmerman, ACLU guy, to come down to the City Council and the Downtown Commission to talk about the issue of the 15-minute parking lot panic law, as I call it. Any comments on the parking lot panic law, by the way? I don't know if you've read it. I can show you a copy of it if you want to take a look.
Well, I haven't studied in detail, but first of all, my first comment is that it's one can imagine other kinds of rationales for it, but we all know the real reason. This is an anti-poor issue. Second, I have several particularized concerns. For example, one of the issues, I heard that some folks were suggesting that there's a conflict or tension between feminist concern with keeping women safe from rape and this issue. And it goes in the opposite direction that one might suppose, is that a woman who might be concerned about loiterers in the vicinity of her car would want to stay in her parked car until the driver of that car may be returning. And this law, as proposed, would criminalize that woman engaging in reasonable self-defense.
Hi, Rick.
Hi, how are you doing?
Doing fine.
And I think
you have to shut up pretty soon.
Yes, indeed. In fact,
you've been talking for a long time.
Indeed, and so you won't get the rest
of 5 extra minutes.
5 extra minutes.
Four and a half, actually.
The rest of my question will be found sometime in futuro. In futuro.
In el futuro.
Because we've got another wonderful program.
Thanks, Ray.
Right
and
now.
Folks,
thank you.
And thank you, Dennis, for being a little bit late. So that's it for Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Back with you again on Sunday morning. We'll whoop it up. In the meantime, keep your eyes open and your mouth open as well. But don't put anything in it that you don't want in there. Thank you. Talk to you on Sunday.
Things are looking up, I'm a bird, it's not a living.
I'm talking about.